Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Good Labor Day weekend afternoon to you. I am Jim Behnke, and welcome to this edition, September 5th, 2009, of Space Talk right here on WMMB. We certainly encourage you to join in today's conversation about space and all things related to the space program by dialing into 768-1240 or star 1240 on your AT&T wireless telephone. We had an absolutely great show last week, in part because of your participation. We had phone calls, we had email coming in, and by the way, that email address is spacetalking@AOL.com, spacetalking@AOL.com, and that just really helps move the show right along and shows your support, not only for what we're doing here on WMMB to support the space program, but shows your support of the space program as your community leaders and others in the program and the community listen in to folks being interested in what we're talking about. If you are new to the program this weekend, on a Labor Day weekend, a holiday long 3-day weekend, we do welcome you especially to this show, which is about the space program, all things considered, if you will, about space, not only launch operations and mission operations and the things that go on here at Cape Canaveral, but all of those things related to the space program that are part of exploring the final frontier and utilizing the final frontier, whether it's for commercial purposes, military, space tourism, if you are interested in that kind of thing. And in fact, if you are interested in flying up there one day yourself, this is a program you're going to want to stick around and listen to, especially today as we get into a little bit later the details of commercial spaceflight and what it means for you, what it means for the Cape, what it means for the nation. And try to answer that question, which we all want to know, is when will it be our turn to go without necessarily being a career NASA astronaut? Well, before we take a look forward, by the way, I just want to let you know that if you perceive any weakness in my voice today or if I have to duck away from the microphone and cough, that's right, oink oink to you. If you are a fellow sufferer, the Behnke family got hit with the flu this week, and I am on the other side of it now, having taken my doses of Tamiflu, and which is a wonderful medicine, by the way. There's no doubt that our science folks know what they're doing when it comes to the pharmaceuticals, because that thing just knocked it right out of me. And the kids are back to school and back to work as well. The only one that didn't suffer was my wife. So she kept us quarantined upstairs all week, fed us food every once in a while by kind of throwing it up the stairs. And we all muddled through it together. And my other son, oldest, home from the weekend from college, has been banned from the house, which he doesn't mind, actually, because then that means he can go out and do whatever he wants and only check in with us every once in a while. Are you listening, Christopher? So with those excuses out of the way, let's talk about what's going on with our space program this week. Of course, all eyes from the Cape here are on the Space Shuttle Discovery and the International Space Station. Of course, Discovery launched during the last few seconds of August 28th and continues to get through its mission quite smartly. The third and final spacewalk planned for this mission is about to get underway. In fact, they're a few minutes ahead of schedule. By the end of this hour, in fact, they should be cracking open the hatch and heading outside. Today's spacewalkers, Danny Olivas and the Swedish-European astronaut Christer Fuglesang, will be deploying what's called an external payload attachment bracket to the space station, replacing a device that helps the space station sense its orientation in orbit and installing some additional global positioning satellite system equipment on the exterior of the station. And we've talked about this external payload attachment bracket before, and I want to underscore and highlight it again because it's a direct result of the fact that our space shuttle program is winding down. As the shuttle program does wind down here, at least the current plan for flights to end next year, We will not have any way to bring up large replacement objects, large orbital replacement units, they're sometimes called ORUs, to the space station. We won't be able to take advantage of the shuttle's cargo bay to bring these larger items up. And so with this attachment of the sort of the storage bracket outside, the plan now is on future shuttle missions is to basically haul up as much as possible on each flight and just load this space station up with as many extra spare parts and packages of supplies and equipment as we possibly can so that the station can sustain itself through this downtime when we kind of await and see what's the new transportation system and what is our new way to get things into space and up to the space station. And so after two spacewalks earlier in the mission to take care of some maintenance on the station, replace and swap out an ammonia tank and do some other work on the outpost, this spacewalk now, the third and final one, to primarily get this this bracket put together. In the meantime, the Leonardo module, the Italian-built cargo module that is now attached to the station after having been pulled out of Discovery's cargo bay right away after docking, that transfer work is going well. The report that I saw for late Friday, the last time NASA updated with numbers, said that about 90% of all of the equipment and supplies that was carried up to the station on Leonardo had been unpacked. And when you consider that that work has taken place and they've also been packing things for the return to Earth, overall, that whole transfer operation of unpacking and packing is about 60% complete. In fact, when you look at the mission and think that they're about 60% of the way through the flight as it is now, they seem to be right on the timeline from that, and that's looking good. Looking ahead this week for the shuttle mission, they do plan to undock on Tuesday, about 3:30 in the afternoon, 3:27 to be precise is the current number, and then land on September 10th at about 7:06. That's Thursday night this week, about 7:06 p.m. In the early evening. And so all going well aboard the space station. A couple of things you may have heard about in the news in the last couple of days regards to shuttle and station. First of all, yesterday the space station had I guess you could call it a close call in the sense that a piece of debris from an Ariane 5 rocket launched in 2006 came within about 8/10 of a mile Friday of hitting the space station. And while that's very close, I mean 8/10 of a mile, that's from here to the mailbox down the street, not a concern for this particular orbital pass because the object was basically big enough, and the folks at NORAD and Space Command that track objects in space and determine when there's a potential for collision had such a good lock on this piece of debris because it was so big and the orbit so very precise that they could tell to the point where the probability was zero that there would be any kind of concern about this object hitting the station. The concern with orbital debris where they want to move out of the way is when you have smaller objects that are more difficult to precisely track, and then there's a margin of error in exactly where that thing's going to be when it whips by, and that's when they go ahead and take maneuvers, the chance to maneuver the space station either higher or lower orbit or change its attitude in some way to allow that debris to pass by. There's an imaginary box that surrounds the space station. They're constantly tracking it, and I love the way that Florida Day, Todd Halverson, my buddy there, described it as sort of like a pizza-shaped box, and others have used the same description. That's about a half mile in thickness and takes up about 15 square miles, and they keep track of anything that might fly through that box, and if it comes close enough and they're concerned about it and there's a margin of error and there's a probability that they could strike, they go ahead and move that. Orbital debris, a big problem for space right now, and one day we're going to have a guy who's an expert on this come back and talk to us all about it. So anyway, those are some of the things that are going on in space this week. Endeavour had an engine leak, not a big concern. We're going to watch it for you, let you know more about it in the future if we need to. But when we come back, we're going to talk about space policy with somebody who helped shape our nation's space policy and now is working some things that affects everybody on the Space Coast here on Space Talk on WMMB in just a moment.
During these troubled economic times, you may have questions about your financial future. The experts at FPT Services in Rockledge have the answers. They'll listen to you, develop a custom plan, and work as your partner with a full array of financial and estate planning services. Don't wait for the economy to recover. Call FPT Services in Rockledge at 631-0383. That's 631-0383. Find them online at fptservices.com.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And this is Space Talk with Jim Banky, your host. Welcome, everybody, to this Labor Day edition of the radio program all about our nation's space program. And we certainly do invite you to participate, be a part of the conversation. Whether you have comments or questions about our subject of the day or whether you just have a space question in general you want to pose, you are welcome to give us a call. This is just an open conversation all the time. We invite you to call at 768-1240 locally along the Space Coast. Also, AT&T wireless customers here in Florida's Space Coast, give us a call, *1240 on your wireless telephone. If you're calling long distance or away from Florida's Space Coast from anywhere in the nation or the world, the number is 321-768-1240. And, of course, we'll take your emailed questions at spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, let's get to the heart of the matter for today. Brett Alexander is a name that may not be a household name along Florida's Space Coast, but I can guarantee you that at some point in his career, he's helped make and formulate decisions that have touched all of us, not only on the Space Coast, but perhaps throughout the entire space program. Brett is a very well-respected space policy expert. He's got more than 17 years experience working in the space community. He spent 5 years in the White House for the Office of Science and Technology Policy, working under both Presidents Clinton and President Bush, which is a feat in and of itself. Subsequently, he spent 4 years in the entrepreneurial space community at a time when that community was really building. He was seen as a very early leader in all of that, and in fact, went on now to serve as president of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation, which is an industry association of businesses and organizations working to make commercial human spaceflight a reality. We're not talking about commercial spaceflight in terms of Atlas and Delta rockets launching big communication satellites, but we're talking things like space tourism and other things like that. Brett also was one of the primary authors of the Vision for Space Exploration, which was announced in 2004, and in that way he has been a very much a part of our lives here. So, Brett, welcome.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good, I'm glad. And you're calling in from Washington, and I want to say thank you for being here on the Labor Day weekend. Let's start by talking about space policy, if we can. First of all, it's somewhat of a mystery, I think, to how it all happened. And I'm wondering, with the Augustine panel going on right now and where everything's happening with that, what's the process going to be like here in the next few weeks? How are we going to take recommendations from a panel and turn that into space policy? Is there a standard way that happens?
Well, there is a process that this new administration has set up. I think, as we all know, it's the Obama administration that came in and said, we need to establish a panel, which became the Augustine Committee, to look at our nation's human spaceflight program and the direction, particularly the direction set by the previous administration with the Vision for Space Exploration. Is there a disconnect between the budget and the goals and the technology, and how do we move forward on that? And so because it's a White House commission that was set up, the White House is going to be the ones that are receiving the options and the briefing, the final report from the committee. Now, the committee was tasked just to provide options, several options within the current budget framework, and then one or two options that may be for additional money. And so it's really up to the White House then to take those options in, understand the nuances of them, understand what's being sort of recommended in each of those options, and then figure out what it wants to do. So ultimately, it's going to be the White House and the administration working with NASA, also bringing in the Department of Defense, State Department, because of our international obligations with the station, and others, to formulate a new way forward and then to take that up to the Hill, to the Congress, and say, this is what we'd like to do. And then it's going to be a dialogue between the administration and the Congress as to any program changes in how we go forward.
Well, when that's happening in the White House, you know, and of course, I'm as ignorant about how things work in the White House as others are, maybe about how a shuttle main engine works, which I know a little bit something about. So, you know, all I can tell you is what I saw on the West Wing, you know. I mean, is it six guys in the White House around pizza in the Roosevelt Room figuring out the direction of our space program?
Well, believe it or not, the West Wing was surprisingly accurate in many respects. In this case, it's a little more deliberative than six guys sitting around with pizza. But there's several things that are going on in the White House. You've got the budget side of things, which is incredible budget pressures, huge deficit, major economic issues. And so the space program, which is less than 1% of the federal budget, is not a high priority from a new budgetary, you know, resources perspective. Then you have the technical side, led by my former office, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, which really does study the space program, the history of the space program, and set that kind of policy direction. Where do we need to be going? And they work, obviously, in concert with the National Security Council for the national security side of space, mm-hmm. which is has a budget equal to or larger than the civil side of space.
Right.
And then you have the real political side of the White House, which is, you know, the president's closest advisors, and of course that's what you always saw in the West Wing, those type of people, who really have to then say, where does this president want to put his emphasis? Where does he want to make his mark? Where does he want to put additional resources, and where do things have to live within the current framework they have? So you've got those three or four different things going on to make a new policy. And given the time of the year and the fact that budgets are in process or being debated on Congress already, there's not a lot of time to digest what the Augustine Committee is going to be saying before going up to the Hill and starting that negotiation.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about how all that relates to, really quick, about how the Vision for Space Exploration came about, which you were very directly involved in. I guess one of the big questions that I've always wondered about the vision was, once it came out, then there was this big, you know, discussion about whether the moon should have been the right destination or Mars, and I've always argued it shouldn't be about destination, it should be about enabling infrastructure and capability. But in any case, were you a little bit surprised by that, and was that a big debate that went on back then?
There was certainly a big debate about where to go and what, you know, what the vision should be. And, you know, the general feeling was, in agreement with you, that you wanted to build the capabilities to go multiple places. I think if you read the Vision for Space Exploration documents, it says that quite explicitly.
I think it does.
But if you're going to go to Mars eventually, if you will, or to a moon around Mars or to an asteroid, you're going to want to demonstrate those capabilities closer to home. And the moon is 3 days away. It is the logical place where you would demonstrate those capabilities, even if you're not going to stay there long term but move on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why it became about the moon, if you will. And I guess what surprised me is that, you know, in my career in the space field, what we've wanted for a number of years and what everybody said is, hey, we need a president like Kennedy mm-hmm. stand up and say, here's where we're going to go, here's what we're going to do, and to rally the nation. And I think the surprise that I had was, you know, we finally got that. We had President Bush stand up and say, here's what we're going to do.
Right.
It was born out of tragedy, the Columbia tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
There was a clear sense that we needed to do something different, and here was a bold vision to do it, and actually some additional resources to do it, not a lot, but some additional resources. And the collective, you know, community, the space community, sort of, you know, rallied around it, but there was not, that was not long-lasting.
Right.
Then you get into, well, what's the right architecture? You know, how do we do this? What about the existing programs, et cetera? And so, you know, I think there was an opportunity 5 years ago with the vision to unify everybody in a new direction, and I think what this administration saw coming in is that we do not have that unity of direction and vision and not everybody's on the same page.
No,
so they are having to have this committee, the Augustine Committee, look at that.
And I agree with that observation. It just drives me crazy. We finally get really what we've all been asking for so many years, and then we can't agree how we want to go about doing it. And it just and it pulled apart. The other part about it, though, is the money, of course. And what drives me crazy, and I know it does you, Brad, is that, you know, it takes so little extra for NASA's budget to be added to make some of these things happen when you compare it relative to the billions and trillions that are spent elsewhere without even giving it a second thought sometimes. Why can't we just get that extra little bit of, you know, money squeezed out of the budget for NASA?
Well, from a Washington, you know, budgetary perspective, if you will, everybody can say the same thing. So
right.
National Institutes of Health can say, we just need a couple more billion and we can make a breakthrough on swine flu or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, too late for that.
Too late for that. But, you know, the Department of Energy can say the same thing. You know, so there is a tremendous pressure at the top level of the government to control costs. You know, healthcare costs, Medicare, the reason we're having this big healthcare debate is because those structural things within the budget, Social Security, Medicare, defense, those are all going up, and they've been going up for quite a while, and they're squeezing everything else out. The first 3 years after the vision for space exploration was announced, NASA was the only non-Homeland Security, non-defense discretionary agency, and that's, you know, Washington speak, but basically to say of the discretionary thing.
And Brad, let me cut you right there. We're gonna take a quick break here. We're gonna come back, finish his thoughts, and talk about commercial space as a possible answer. Space Talk and Jim Behnke back with you after this break.
Now back to our own mission specialist, Jim Behnke.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this second half of Space Talk for the Labor Day weekend 2009. I am Jim Behnke, your host. And with me on the phone from the Washington, D.C. area is Brett Alexander. He is president of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation. And we are talking about space policy because he was also part of the White House space policy team that helped put together the vision for space exploration. But we want to talk more about commercial space now. And Brett, the way to get into that, of course, is that I know that as part of the vision and part of our whole nation's effort to continue to move into space is that we want our government and all of us to begin to use commercial space more and more. And so let's get into that. Let's talk about, first of all, what is the Commercial Spaceflight Federation and who do you represent?
Well, the Commercial Spaceflight Federation is a trade association of about 20 different companies and organizations that are dedicated to getting commercial human spaceflight going. So these are companies that are trying to put people into space either through suborbital spaceflights like Spaceship One flights in 2004 or orbital spaceflights to take people either to the space station or to take people up to just to fly around and look around. And so we also have organizations like spaceports, including Space Florida there on the Space Coast, that recognize that in the future, human spaceflight from the private sector is a huge business. There's huge potential there. And the question is, how do we get there? We have a number of companies that are developing technologies, building systems to do that right now. And so there's a paradigm shift going on, if you will. And I think a lot of the organizations, state organizations, spaceports, as well as the government, NASA, and particularly the Augustine Committee, are looking at commercial space for people and cargo up to the space station as a way to jumpstart that market.
Now, is your organization, you know, looking at that cargo side? I mean, I know that you don't necessarily represent United Launch Alliance and launching big communication satellites into geosynchronous orbit. But you know, the whole SpaceX, Taurus 2 cargo to space and all that kind of thing, is that part of your venue, part of your portfolio?
Absolutely. The cargo program to take cargo up to the space station commercially is called COTS, or the Commercial Orbital Transportation Services Program. And that program is something that that the Commercial Space Flight Federation worked on very hard to get started, where NASA invested certain amount of funds in companies to develop these capabilities, and then recently awarded $3.5 billion worth of contracts to buy services up and back for cargo. Now, because we're focused on human spaceflight, we've also been pushing for a long time that NASA should do the same thing for people,
mm-hmm.
or in NASA parlance, it's for crew to the space station. And they recently awarded or began a $50 million program called Commercial Crew Development, or CCDEV in their speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first time that they have actually said yes when we're putting money against a commercial crew activity. One of the things that the Augustine Committee, which is reviewing human spaceflight for the Obama administration, one of the things that's coming out of what they've been saying publicly is that in every one of the recommendations or the options, if you will, that are not, say, the current program as it exists now, they are saying that commercial crew is the way to go. In fact, Sally Ride has said, quote, we need to get NASA out of the business of getting crew to low Earth orbit.
Yeah.
That's huge. Norm Augustine has said essentially the same thing. These are what I would consider the two most conservative members of that panel who have come around and said, you know, we're really impressed by what the commercial sector has done, and now it's time to move the commercial activities into the arena of people flying in space as well.
Any of your folks looking at reducing the cost of getting into orbit? I know SpaceX is trying to change the way launch is done. I mean, I keep dreaming of the day when, you know, you're $100 per pound to low Earth orbit, and then watch out, because now you've got commercial folks wanting to go do science, to go do mining asteroids, to go do solar power satellites. I mean, it just all the dream stuff is out there waiting to happen commercially if we can just figure out a way to get off this planet.
Right. Certainly our companies are looking at lowering the cost. When you look at the space shuttle program, the space shuttle is an amazing vehicle. It takes 7 people up there at a time and 25,000 pounds of cargo to the station, you know, and you bring that, you know, large orbiter back and reuse it every time. But it's also very expensive. By contrast, you know, when the shuttle retires, we're going to be paying the Russians about $51 million for every seat that we use on the Soyuz rocket to send up a U.S. astronaut. So all of our companies are looking at $51 million per seat and saying we're pretty confident that we can beat that price.
Yeah.
In the beginning, that's not a low enough cost that the average American, me included, are going to be able to fly into space. But as with the early days of aviation, it initially started with the very wealthy that could fly and then government contracts to move the mail, and then prices started to come down to where aviation is today, which is a mode of transportation that everybody uses and is essential to our economy.
Mm-hmm.
So as you look forward with commercial human spaceflight, we'd like to get there. But the first part is, you know, developing the capabilities, doing it safely, more reliably than, say, historical human spaceflight in the past, and making sure that we deliver crew and cargo to the space station for NASA, and leverage that to build a commercial business as well, to provide, you know, services for private people to go into space as well.
So it's a slow day in the office. You sneak online, you start looking at these travel packages, and you look at this, you know, $10,000 adventure package to somewhere, and you figure you would take the wife with you, so now it's $20,000. You know, when does, just throw it out there, when does space become part of that? You know, I'm figuring that if I can, even at my station in life, If it was the one big, huge, giant adventure trip and all the kids are through college and the widescreen television is bought, $25,000 to space for a week, that sounds pretty reasonable. Is that any time in anyone's future, or is that just crazy?
I think it's definitely in someone's future. It may be, you know, longer than 20 or 30 years for you and me to consider doing that. But at the same time right now, you have companies like Virgin Galactic and X-Core Aerospace and others that are developing suborbital rockets to fly up to 100 kilometers, be able to see the blackness of the sky with the millions and millions of stars, see the curvature of the Earth, and, you know, the thinness of the atmosphere. And those initial prices are being pegged around $200,000 a seat. And Virgin Galactic has been quoted as saying that those prices will come down by half very quickly and then will continue to come down. So you can see where $10,000, $20,000 for a suborbital flight is in the realm of possible in our lifetime.
Brett, talk about, I want to talk about regulations a little bit because, you know, I know the states are trying to do what they can individually to compete, and yet you've got, you know, all these states working together in your federation, which I think is an interesting setup. You got the federal government kind of hands off right now with regulating and making sure it's a fair playing field, or certainly worried about safety. You know, talk a little bit about all that. Is this going to be a safe thing? Are we policing ourselves? What's sort of the status of all of that right now?
Sure. Well, the federal government does regulate space transportation commercially through the Federal Aviation Administration. The FAA has an Office of Commercial Space Transportation. I worked there back in the 90s. And when it comes to human spaceflight, the law that was passed by Congress in 2004 about this said, you know, FAA, you can regulate based on the safety of people on the ground so that nobody that's not involved is going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't regulate for the safety of the passenger on board. And that was pushed by industry and others who said, we've got to be able to develop systems without having everything prescribed beforehand. There's going to be a certain amount of risk. Spaceflight is more risky than, say, aviation,
mm-hmm.
for example. And there are people out there that will spend the money to go to Mount Everest, for example, and climb up Mount Everest, where about 10% of people that try it actually die in the process. There are people that spend money to go heli-skiing, you know, jumping out of helicopters
sure.
and skiing. And so we allow people to take risks to do things they want to do, and spaceflight should be no different. But because it's a large dynamic activity, you want to make sure that the average American on the ground going about his business isn't put at risk. And so that's what the FAA regulates for. It's the industry that's coming together and saying, okay, let's look at those standards and things for making this safe. You know, part of the charter of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation is to help improve safety of human spaceflight over time and to work together on that. So safety is very much a concern and very important to all of the members of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation.
Is there a sense, with about a minute here before our next break, Brett, is there a sense that there is a hands-off kind of on commercial spaceflight until something goes wrong?
Well, the way the law was written, there was a time limit of 8 years up through 2012 where it was sort of hands-off, if you will, until that time, and then the FAA had the option to go ahead and regulate but didn't have to. And so it was going to be based on, well, how's the industry doing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask you a couple of questions about regulations. We're gonna pause here for a moment and take a quick break, and then come back with a couple of more minutes with Brett Alexander, who is the president of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation, talking to us on Space Talk from Washington, D.C. This is Jim Banky, your host. We invite you to participate. Get in last chance for phone calls at 321-768-1240 or on AOL, spacetalking@AOL.com. We'll be back in just a few minutes with the final segment of the Labor Day weekend edition of this show, Space Talk on WMMB.
Incident Endeavor, roll program.
Roger, roll, Endeavor.
Now is the time for shuttle program employees to chart a new course.
OTCSO.
A course that will take their careers beyond the last space shuttle mission to new job opportunities and horizons.
Pilots go.
Brevard Workforce is helping our community shuttle engineers, technicians, and administrative workers to launch new careers through the Aerospace Workforce Transition Program.
Houston flight is go.
While they continue to safely launch the remaining shuttle missions. Through the programs, resources, and services, aerospace workers can map out a strategy, undergo skill assessments, take workshops, update degrees and certifications, or receive education funding. Assistance is available and ready.
PTC, go.
Contact Brevard Workforce today and take the first easy step to prepare for a successful post-shuttle career in aerospace or other industries.
The launch team is ready to proceed.
Call Brevard Workforce at 394-0556. That's 394-0556. Visit them online at launchnewcareers.com or Twitter them at launchcareers.
You are go for launch.
If it's happening in space, Jim Banky is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
With our final few moments remaining this afternoon on a Labor Day edition of Space Talk on WMMB, we've got Brett Alexander on the phone with us from Washington. He is the president of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation. And, Brett, I wanted to ask you, you made the airline analogy a little bit ago, and I want to see how far that applies. How far do you think it will apply to dealing with spaceflight? I'm thinking of the future spaceport. You've got FAA-certified pilots, FAA-certified flight attendants, passengers that have to meet certain guidelines, maybe safety briefings, something like that. Certainly they're going to have to wear something or a seatbelt at minimum, maybe something more sophisticated for spaceflight. You're going to have mechanics working on these vehicles on the ground, technicians. Is that how you see all this moving toward all that kind of a world and that kind of a regulatory world?
I think that that's probably the ultimate end state, but I think that's a long way off to where the FAA or the government would be involved in those sort of level of details. I think right now they're making sure that we protect the public safety, and so they do look at the safety system. If there's pilots on board, they look at the pilots and whether they're able to withstand the environments, and they're properly trained. And they're looking at passengers from a training perspective of, you know, are they not going to do any harm to the vehicle inside while they're flying, you know, mm-hmm. how they get in and out, and that sort of thing. So they've already, you know, started down that road. But right now, you know, all the different commercial systems are also going to be very different technically, so you can't look at it the same way aviation is regulated.
Well, and certainly, you know, and I'm also thinking of our workforce here, especially at the Cape. And if you heard the break there, Brevard Workforce, one of mm-hmm. our sponsors of Space Talk, you know, we're looking for new things for these workers to do as shuttle goes away. And the technicians are, you know, this highly skilled lot. I know a lot of them are, you know, have the space tech training. In fact, there's a program called Space Tech with Brevard Community College where you can get a certificate of sorts to work on spacecraft, sort of a space version of an A&P license that I know we can get at.
Right.
And do you see those kind of same kind of Absolutely. Skills transferring?
Absolutely. What the Augustine Committee is about to recommend is a robust program for commercial crew to take people to the International Space Station. At the same time, there's going to be that exploration program in whatever form it takes going forward. So for workers at the Cape, this is really the best of both worlds, or it's additive, in that the commercial activity means more, both Falcon 9 launches as well as the more Atlas and Delta launches with capsules on top that need to be processed, mm-hmm. that need workers to operate. So it is a commercial crew and commercial cargo and commercial space activities at the Cape has the potential for real strong growth to help through those dips in the workforce that come from the retirement of the shuttle and until the next system gets online. So, you know, and then when you look 10, 20 years in the future, hopefully there will be a lot more activity on the commercial side with the big, you know, activities on the government side going to the moon or going wherever, but lots of frequent flights for commercial people going into space.
And that other activity, you know, we always think of space tourism, so it's all recreational. I mean, is there what other goals, what other dreams are out there for commercial space?
Well, you have companies like Bigelow Aerospace that want to build space stations, and not just, you know, as tourist hotels, but for a couple of different markets, you know, U.S. companies, worldwide companies, pharmaceuticals, manufacturing, et cetera, those companies that got really interested in the shuttle back in the 80s, but, were put off by the high cost, the delays, the process, if you will. So a more commercial orientation there will help. And then you have governments around the world that want to send people into space for national pride purposes, for experiment purposes. So there's going to be a robust market for them. Plus, then, you know, the tourists, if you will, that can afford to go as well, add to that market. So with the U.S. government helping to enable those capabilities on the commercial side and using them to get to the space station, you're then going to increase the number of activities by all this commercial activity, which is, you know, part of the original commercial goals that NASA had, was to put technology in the original Space Act, was to get technology commercially used to use space.
Brett, last word on Commercial Space Flight Federation in 10 seconds or less. What's the next top thing on your agenda right now?
Top thing on our agenda right now is to look at the Augustine Committee report findings and hopefully see the government through to doing a big commercial crew program.
Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. Brett, thanks. We're going to wrap it up with you, sir. I've got some other business to take care of. Thanks for your time today, taking some holiday weekend to be with us. We sure do appreciate your time. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Good. So long to Brett, President of the Commercial Space Flight Federation, and thanks to our friend Janet for helping us arrange all of that. Hey, looking ahead really quick in the 2 minutes we have left together, I want to remind you what's happening this week. Of course, Tuesday, as we talked about, the Augustine panel is going to send in their summary report to the White House and to NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden. We'll be keeping an eye on that, see what that has to say. Five finalists for the Space Florida's president has been identified and apparently going to be interviewed this week, and we hope that goes well. Frank DiBello, the interim president, who was our first guest on Space Talk earlier this summer, is among the finalists. We wish them all very well. This Tuesday, Atlas V launch from the Cape between 5:35 and 7:45 in the evening. Weather 60% no go, because what's in our skies right now is likely to be in our skies on Tuesday. A government communications satellite is the payload flying, and that's not a secret. They just won't give us the details, but they did announce that today. Discovery landing back here at Kennedy Space Center, 7:06 p.m. Thursday, if all goes well. And in both cases, we should be bringing you live launch cover or live launch coverage of the Atlas and live landing coverage of the Discovery mission. We'll go on the air just a few minutes before each of those events happen. Next week on Space Talk, Patty Stratton from United Space Alliance is going to stop by to talk about their company plans for the Space Coast as we transition from the Space Shuttle to, I guess, who knows what at this point. USA is the prime contractor responsible for preparing the shuttle for launch and is the Kennedy Space Center's largest employer. So we're looking forward to hearing from Patty about what their plans are for the company and for their workforce as they go through this transition. 2 weeks from today, former NASA flight director Wayne Hale is going to be my guest, and I can guarantee you that that is going to be a program you will not want to miss. Wayne is a great guy, a great interview, and a wonderful communicator, and we look forward to speaking with him again next week. Also next week, when Patty's on the show, before we get going with her, we're going to have some news to share about this radio program, Space Talk. It's got some good news to share with you and about its future here on WMMB. We'll also fill you in on some details as how we're going to handle the college football season. And certainly next weekend and this week as the NFL season returns, once again, we will watch our Minnesota Vikings make a run for the Super Bowl and take out a few cheesehead Packers along the way. Follow us this week on Space Talking on Twitter. Give us a look at WMMBAM.com on keyword Space Talk, and we will keep you up to date on what's going on in space. We'll be with you Tuesday for the launch, Thursday for the landing, if all goes well. This is Jim Banky for Space Talk on WMMB. Have a pleasant holiday weekend. So long, everybody.